Hello everyone, and welcome to the Associate Affiliate Career Podcast. And each show today, lots of previews and reviews of cricket that's just finished. I'm joined, as always, by Andrew Nixon from Cricket Bureau. Welcome, Andrew.
Hi, Russ. Hi, everybody.
So, start with the news, and the Northern Hemisphere summer is starting to kick off, particularly in the major nations of that region, Ireland, Scotland and the Netherlands.
Yes, indeed. So Ireland, Scotland and the Netherlands both started their new sort of more professional domestic setup. Ireland with the interprovincial game between Leinster and the North West, which ended up with quite a thrilling finish with Kevin O'Brien scoring a great century to win the game that originally looked looks like Leinster were going to lose, and it had a good crowd as well. A few hundred people turned up to watch it, which bodes well for the future. Hopefully those crowds can continue throughout the year. Scotland, their series hasn't started too well. The first game got postponed, and then the second game got washed out after about 8 overs. So it's not a good start for them, but they've revised their domestic setup from last year. It was 3 teams, and they've concentrated the strength into 2 teams and introduced 3-day cricket, as have Ireland, of course. And the Netherlands have also started their new interregional series, the North Holland Hurricanes and the South Holland Seafarers. And looks like North Holland won the game with Tom Cooper scoring 124. And yeah, I think these sort of new interregional series are going to be sort of good for these countries. It gives them a level of cricket between club cricket and international cricket, especially for Ireland and Scotland with a 3-day cricket. So going from sort of 1-day club cricket to 4-day cricket in the Intercontinental Cup is quite a leap, and some 3-day domestic cricket I think will certainly help bridge that gap and perhaps help them perform even better in the Intercontinental Cup than they have been doing.
Yeah, it's certainly the case. It's something that's a surprise to me. I think that they focus so much on one-day cricket in the Associated Nations because certainly in Australia there's a lot more 2-day cricket.
Yeah, the Netherlands did try to launch some 2-day cricket, I think about 4 years ago, which didn't quite take off. I think they had about 4 regions playing, and I think they played 1 match and then gave up on the tournament, which was a bit of a shame. I mean, personally, I've never been a fan of 2-day cricket. I know it works in Australia, but I think with the European weather, 2-day cricket tends to sort of almost always end up in a draw. I know they've tried it in some leagues in England as well, similar to how you do grade cricket in Australia, and it's never really worked. I mean, I tend to prefer 3-day cricket. So whether or not they can have bring some more 2-day or 3-day cricket into the Netherlands will be, I think they need it. Netherlands have sometimes struggled in the Intercontinental Cup, especially when they're missing the likes of Ryan Tenderscarter. So if they can give their players more experience of it, that can only be a good thing.
Obviously, the key tournaments for those teams at the moment have just started as well. Ireland A has been playing the MCC. MCC made 194 in the first innings. Ireland's chasing. Is this a big, important game for them, or just a bit of a war?
I think it would have been. The game is actually over now, because the second day got completely washed out. Obviously, the Irish summer hasn't quite got started properly yet. It's still only May. I think, in general, these games are important. It gives the sort of next sort of teams, next players in Ireland, a chance to play against a reasonably quality opposition, and again playing 3-day cricket as well, which, again, they don't do it at a domestic level, so it gives them a good chance. MCC fielded a team with a couple of good players in, Reinhard Strydom, who previously played for Ireland, of course, and I think a couple of other sort of county professionals as well. Just a shame that the weather didn't play along and it ended up in a sort of draw. So I think it could have been better than it has been, but you know, this is the thing with cricket. It's always affected by the weather.
Yes, particularly I think in Ireland. Netherlands might have wished that the weather had affected their opening match of the YB40. Bowled out for 110, I believe.
101.
101. So that's a disappointing loss for them.
Indeed it is, and I sort of listened to a bit of the game on the radio yesterday, and think the pitch is perhaps slightly to blame, but obviously both teams playing the same pitch. So, and Kent did struggle at the start of their innings. They lost sort of 3 wickets for relatively cheaply for 53, and they sort of took a partnership, 4th wicket partnership for them to win the game. But yeah, very disappointing, especially after how well the Netherlands played last year. Netherlands missing a couple of players through injury, Michael Swart and Tim van der Gooten. I think they're hoping they'll be fit for the next games, and they need especially van der Gooten's pace bowling. So hopefully they can bounce back from this disappointing defeat and perform as well as they did last year.
And the Scotland game against Hampshire was another loss?
Yes, unfortunately. Scotland performed a little bit better than the Netherlands. They scored 192 from their 40 overs. Preston Momsen, captain in the side for the first time, scored 60 not out. But Hampshire sort of hung on for the win. Again, Hampshire lost some early wickets and Scotland had them on the back foot for a bit. But I think the professionalism of Hampshire sort of won out in the end. Scotland have not always done as well in this tournament as the Netherlands have in recent years, but they will be disappointed that they couldn't defend 192, which in a 40-over game is a reasonably competitive total.
Japanese men's and women's team have continued to tour both England and Scotland. The Japanese team lost to the MCC. I didn't see who was in the MCC side for that, but they lost by 106 runs. But got a very good turnout from the local Japanese population, raised some money.
Yeah, I think so. The crowd estimated at about 1,200 people, which is quite good. And they had the Japanese embassy staff come out and enjoy the game, and lots of sort of cultural exchanges there. They had during the men's game against the MCC, the Japanese women's team were in the crowd talking to the Japanese audience about cricket and how the game's played, and it's been very well received. There's been a couple of articles written about it. I think someone wrote an excellent blog about playing in one of the games. They played against the Authors 11, which is a team made up mostly of writers. They got Ed Giddings in as a ringer, the former England international. Japan actually, I think, took him for a runner ball off his, I think, 7 overs or so. So they were coming up against some quality opponents and playing quite well against them. Unfortunately, it looks like they've not managed to actually win a game yet. Which will be disappointing for them, but I think this tour is about more than just the cricket. It's raising money for a worthy cause as well.
I think also a very valuable experience. They would never have played, or very rarely played on turf wickets. We heard, obviously, in the East Asia Pacific tournament that they had a lot of trouble with that. So this sort of thing is really valuable for them.
Exactly, yeah.
The women have played a couple of games. It's hard to get results, but they won one and lost one against the Scottish Wildcats 11, which is the female youth team. So, again, good experience for them, and actually they have had a positive result.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think we've mentioned it before how the Japanese women's team is a stronger side than the Japanese men's team. It's sort of much higher up the world rankings. And so they will have played on turf a bit more than the men, perhaps. I think the Japanese women, I think, are playing in the Women's World 2020 qualifier this year. If they are, this will be good preparation for that tournament, and hopefully they can do well in that and perhaps sort of push it, make a claim for a World 2020 place.
Absolutely. The MCC, touring all over the place, they managed to also make a quick jaunt to France.
Yes, indeed, and a relatively strong MCC side as well, featuring Darren Bicknell, the former Surrey player, and a couple of former county players as well. They've played 2 matches against France B. In the first game, France B won by 46 runs. French side was about sort of 3/4 of a full-strength side. And for the second game, France B picks sort of youth players just outside the national squad. And they chased down 120 to win in 16 overs. So a successful game for France. So they've got the European Championship this year, and they'll be looking forward to trying to make a good performance in that, and perhaps do better than they did last in 2011, when they had a quite disappointing tournament by all accounts.
On the downside, the India match that was supposed to be played against an associate representative 11 appears to not be going ahead.
Yeah, the warm-up fixtures were announced the other day, and on the date when that associate 11, the India game played, India are down as playing Sri Lanka at Edgbaston as well, which is where the game was supposed to be played. So that looks like that's been canned. It's disappointing in a way, but perhaps slightly for the best, because it was unlikely that the associate 11 was going to have anywhere near a full strength side. The county players probably wouldn't have been released to play in what amounts to an exhibition game, as much as most international cricket are exhibition games these days. And they could have had problems with visas for players from Afghanistan and elsewhere outside of Europe for, again, what is an exhibition game. It's probably easier to get visas for what would be if it was a full one-day international, but it wasn't going to be, so it wouldn't have been a full-strength side, and that could reflect badly on the associates, because whilst a full-strength associate 11 side could probably push India quite close, without the top associate players, it could have been a bit of an embarrassment.
And a couple more administrative more news. Afghanistan pushing ahead with their application for associate membership. I think the document ran to 250 pages, I think I read. So very positive sign that that's likely to go ahead.
Yeah, I think it'll be sort of discussed at the next ICC meeting. I think it's at the end of June. And hopefully they can get associate membership. I think I said on Twitter, the whole concept of status is a bit of an oddity, but it's a bit of an oddity that an affiliate has ODI status rather than them being an associate. I think perhaps the one sticking point in the application could be women's cricket. I think associate members are required now to have quite a high level of women's cricket being played, and Afghanistan, perhaps for cultural reasons, don't have that. Their women's team has pulled out of two tournaments in recent years, for political reasons, was the reason, official reason given. Whether those reasons are actually slightly more nefarious is another question entirely. But hopefully they can get it and get the extra funding that this will bring. They already get their high performance program funding. They've got this TAP funding we discussed on a previous episode. But the grant is a lot higher than the affiliate grant, and give them more money to spend on developing the game there.
Speaking of Afghanistan, I suppose, and development, they have dominated the Asian Elite Under-19 tournament.
Yes, absolutely. They thrashed pretty much every other team in the tournament. I think this tournament was a little disappointing in the way that there were a lot of mismatches. I've been saying for a long time that Asia should look split to three divisions rather than two. I think the bottom of their current elite division, as they call it, is a lot weaker than the top at senior level and at underage level. So, you know, I think Afghanistan beat Thailand by almost 400 runs in one game, and even the UAE, who got to the final and beat Nepal in the semi-final, were hammered twice by Afghanistan. So there's obviously a distinct gap emerging at under-19 level in Asia, and perhaps it's time for them to look at split into three divisions.
Yeah, I do always wonder a little bit about under-19 cricket at this level, because there are so few players. You do get these mismatches probably even more so than the seniors, and it's good to see Afghanistan playing really well, but then it's hard to assess whether or not they're playing well because they are an extremely good side compared to the others, or whether there's just not that many players playing in Thailand or Qatar who both really struggle.
Yeah, and there's always rumours circulating that Afghanistan's side may not entirely be under-19 at the global qualifier in Ireland in 2011. They had a captain who was going grey, and there was at the Under-19 World Cup in New Zealand, one of their players actually admitted to the opposition that he was in his late 20s. So there's been some controversy over the makeup of the Afghanistan side in the past. Hopefully that's not the case now. maybe players in that part of the world, people in that part of the world do tend to look older than in the rest of the world. But hopefully this Afghanistan team is an honest team, that they are really all under 19. When you've got those rumours in the past, it does put a bit of a dampener on the success of their youth team.
And the Africa Under-19s will start on May the 25th as well. I think 8 teams are in that. One to go through to the Under-19 World Cup.
Yeah, and I think you've got to expect Namibia to take that spot there. Tends to be the strongest side at youth level in this region. Kenya and Uganda will hope to perhaps sort of knock them off their perch, but I think Namibia are the likely team to go through. Hopefully, we can get some coverage of this tournament. Having said what we said earlier about the ICC website, I'm not entirely confident that that will happen, but we'll see. And obviously, the last time a tournament was in Uganda, the coverage towards at the beginning of the tournament was quite poor and not up to speed. But hopefully, for this tournament, it'll be a bit better. But I keep saying hopefully the coverage will get better, and it sometimes doesn't. So, but we'll see.
In other news about development, the United States Youth Cricket Association has possibly a little bit controversially just decided to associate with the American Cricket Federation and rejected an offer from the USACA.
Yeah, and rejects that offer quite comprehensively. The vote on whether to accept the USACA offer was unanimously rejected. They've associated with the American Cricket Federation. I've spoken with Jamie Harrison online a couple of times, and he is sort of very disappointed with how USACA have treated him and tried to make him do things their way rather than his way. And his way has been successful. I think the results he's got shows that his way is successful. I'm tempted to think there's a lot of jealousy from USACA that he's managed to do something that they've not managed to do. But in a way, they've not even been trying to do it. They've been concentrating more on the national team. And I think Jamie Harrison quite correctly feels that the way to build a successful national team is to have a good grassroots program producing your players, homegrown players as well, from a young age, who can sort of develop as players and play for the US national side. You put in that base, you're going to end up with a stronger national side. Whereas the USACA are perhaps preferring a more top-down approach than bottom-up. Could be controversial. Obviously, the American Cricket Federation is not the recognised governing body. I think USYTA originally associated with USACA because they felt that it's important to be part of the national governing body. But if the national governing body is completely ineffective for what you're trying to achieve, then why would you continue to stick with dealing with them?
The worry would be that they're actively trying to destroy the USYTA, if that's the case. There was as much an article as a comment that the women's officer for the USACA had been suspended because of taking sponsorship money from the ACF for a women's tournament, which obviously means there is a certain amount of antagonism going on. It would be hopeful that the new CEO is going to try and mend those bridges, and has certainly said that he would like to. You can certainly understand why the USYCA doesn't want to be associated with a body that is antagonistic to their aim. And there's not a lot of money coming through them, so it's not necessarily going to be that big a problem funding-wise.
Absolutely, and so USYCA have got sponsorship deals, and as Peter De La Penna pointed out during WCL3, the USA national side does not have any sponsors, and even Uganda, as a country that isn't as developed a country as the US, has a shirt sponsor, and the USA doesn't. Pretty much a lot of associates now have shirt sponsors, even down to what would have been Division 7 and 8 in the World Cricket League. Obviously, they're now no longer taking place. And the USA, the richest country in the world, doesn't have a shirt sponsor. But the USYCA has managed to get sponsors. They have a deal with Reebok, for example. Reebok, a major multinational company, will sponsor USYCA, but don't touch USACA with a proverbial 10-foot barge pole. If associating with USACA is going to perhaps stop you getting as many sponsors as you otherwise would, because I think, say that Yusaka are a tainted brand, then I think it's probably going to be for the best that they associate with another body. There's a worry that it potentially stops the young players playing producers playing for the US National Society in the future. I don't think that will necessarily be the case. I think players from the ACF leagues did play during WCL3, so we'll see what happens, but I think this will be, I think in the long run this will turn out to be better for USYCA.
Probably a good launching place to talk about the WCL3. It wasn't a little bit of a bad week for United States cricket. They started extremely well. We talked to Peter before the tournament. He said that their games against Nepal and Italy were probably the most important. They won both of those comprehensively. They went into the last day needing a draw against Bermuda, or probably a small loss if Nepal didn't win big against Italy. And it all turned topsy-turvy.
Yeah, indeed. Not a very successful tournament at all for the Americans. Again, it's one of them things where this is how Nepal used to play in tournaments. They'd start really well, and then when it came down to the sort of must win, crucial crunch games, they sort of did a South Africa and choked. And this is what the USA are now doing. And whereas Nepal now, they sort of started badly and then went on to win the game. The Nepal of 2008 would have ended up getting relegated after that bad start. But the Nepal of 2013 is a much stronger side and has managed to sort of get promoted and get an opportunity to play in the World Cup qualifier. And there's an extra level of funding that will come from playing in the World Cup qualifier, and the potential to get even more by qualifying for the High Performance Programme, and the potential exposure to four-day cricket in the Intercontinental Cup that can come from that. So this is a big loss for the US, and they were so close to winning. In that game against Uganda, a tie would have put both teams through. So, that's how sort of close it was. But the US just couldn't hold on. Stephen Taylor, who scored that fantastic century in the first game, 162. I think it's the fourth highest score in the history of the World Cricket League, and then barely scored a run for the rest of the tournament until the sort of quite meaningless third place playoff. So that's sort of disappointing. You could say you hope this gives US the sort of kick that they need to maybe change the way they do things, but we can say that after so many disappointing USA performances, and they never seem to change the way they do things. So who knows what's going to happen in the future?
Yeah, on the other hand, I mean, it was always going to be a difficult tournament. They're very close teams. Uganda played probably slightly better than people expected, and fair play to them. They went through those. They only lost after they'd already qualified to Oman and in the final. Really good tournament for them. Nepal looked for all money gone and came back. They beat Italy by 211 balls to spare in that final round game to push their net run rate back above the USA, which is just an extraordinary victory. What happened to Italy? I mean, they actually went there quite early. They had time to prepare. They really struggled throughout. The batting just didn't fire at all.
Yeah, I mean, you could make the excuse that some of them are coming off a European winter. But obviously some of them are based in Australia and South Africa, would have been playing grade cricket in Australia, club cricket in South Africa over recent months, and so they shouldn't be too out of season, some of the players. But just generally disappointing. They were, I think towards the end they started to blame the umpires. So Joe Scuderi was quite scathing about the umpires on Twitter. And it wouldn't surprise me if he got himself in trouble for that. I think one of the players did get banned for the fifth place playoff, who was another player who had been criticising the umpires publicly. Whether that umpiring was poor or not is, it's not for us to say. But you don't criticise umpires in public. It's one of the rules of cricket. So perhaps they are blaming the umpires for their own shortcomings. They just weren't ready.
Yeah, there was an incident with the Bermuda game where a run out was affected when they thought it across the boundary, which resulted in both Lionel Cairn of Bermuda and Charles Andrew being banned. So, and there was this, yeah, a lot of talk about the umpiring, which is disappointing to hear that it was bad, if it was bad, but Bermuda probably played slightly better than we thought, but actually they had in the paper that they're actually not that disappointed that they didn't get promoted because they need to rebuild, and at least they haven't now been relegated. They're at a high standard. And Amman also relegated. Was that a surprise, or that was probably expected?
Yeah, I think Amman we were sort of expecting to get relegated, but they weren't too far away. I think had Bermuda lost that final game to the USA, Amman would have actually stayed in Division 3 and Bermuda would have been relegated instead. So Amman had quite a good net run rate after their two wins towards the end of the tournament. So Amman weren't perhaps as completely outclassed as we otherwise. I think we thought they'd get relegated, but I think we thought they'd probably be the worst team in the tournament. Certainly I did. But they sort of did slightly better than expected, but will be disappointed to be relegated.
Another thing we need to review, it's been a little while now, but the Dutch tour of Namibia ended with victories for the Namibia in the ICAP game and for the Netherlands in the World Cricket League games. The ICAP game first, really fascinating game throughout this one. I think probably until late on the fourth day it was still up in the air.
Yeah, so this is the, I think, the sort of game that you want in cricket in general. It was a real sort of seesaw battle throughout the game. Obviously, you know, the Netherlands did manage to get the first innings lead. Tom Cooper played well in both innings, got 80-odd in the first innings and 109 in the second, played superbly. But in the second innings, apart from him and Stefan Meiberg, the rest of the batting order wasn't too good in the face of some pretty decent Namibian spin bowling. From the looks of the scorecard, it started well with Pace taking the wickets early in the match, and then the wicket obviously deteriorated because in the second innings the wickets are being taken by spin. So obviously it's the perfect pitch that deteriorates towards the end and starts turning. And Namibia have done well to win, and they now sitting quite high in the Intercontinental Cup table and have a chance of making the final.
Namibia's depth probably helped them a lot too. And this is something we can talk about with the WCL games as well. That they've got Kluizinga down at number 10 or even 11 in those ICAP games, and that gave them that extra kind of 40-50 runs at the end of the innings that just turned out to be just enough, I think, for them to roll over the top. WCL games. The first was won by 31 runs by the Netherlands. They scored 268, and Craig Williams caught 116 in the chase, but just not quite there.
Yeah, absolutely. Quite surprising after the 4-day game. Although Namibia have always been a stronger 4-day side than a 1-day side to some extent. And Netherlands did well to sort of win that first game despite that situation from Craig Williams. But again, as with the Dutch second innings of the Intercontinental Cup, nobody else really made any sort of significant contribution. Nick Schultz scored a sort of quite quick 37 towards the end of the innings, but obviously that wasn't enough. And I think in general, you see this a lot in associate cricket where a side will have one or two players make runs and the rest of the team don't contribute. And you sometimes wonder, are the players expecting the two best players to do the job and sort of don't quite take it as seriously themselves? Whether or not that's the case or not, I don't know, but it's a common occurrence at this level.
And second was something of a thriller. Raymond Benshaw made 93 to set the target of 236, which never looked like it was going to be enough, but the Netherlands contrived to collapse drastically from 3 for 150 at the halfway point to just sneak by a single hit.
Yeah, very, very close game, and in the end it was Dan Van Bunger, and obviously the Netherlands will be delighted he's decided to come back to play international cricket after a few years away from the national side. And he scored 60 to sort of take them across the line. But in the end it was the number 10 and number 11 batsmen, with I think it was a number 11 who hit the four to win the game right at the end with just two overs to spare. So yeah, it was a number 10 and number 11 who had to to have put on that last partnership with the number 11 Jamil hitting the winning four with two overs to spare. And it was a very exciting game to follow the scorecard of. It's a shame it wasn't live streamed, which is something we'll probably keep saying.
I'm sure we will. The points table now, the Netherlands are well placed to take that second spot on 14. Namibia can no longer qualify directly for the World Cup. But because the Netherlands have to play Ireland in their next, one of their next two fixtures, their final two fixtures, they're not necessarily there yet. It's going to be a close finish to this in the last couple of rounds.
Absolutely. It's, Netherlands will play Canada after they've played Ireland. And Canada have been quite a weak side, so I think you'd still back the Netherlands to get that World Cup qualifier spot. Sorry, World Cup spot, I should say. Namibia now out of that, out of the running for that, as are Canada. The results in this mean that Canada also can't qualify. So it's looking like Ireland and the Netherlands are going to be in the World Cup again, which is well deserved for them. Yeah, Scotland still have a chance. They have quite a sort of difficult. They play Kenya, who are sort of quite close to them in the table, and then they play Ireland. So it'd be, it's a difficult final few matches for them. Yeah, he's looking like Ireland and Netherlands are going to get those two World Cup places.
And you wanted to say something about the ICC website that's been revamped.
Yeah, it's been redesigned recently in the last few days, and it's I can't say what I really think about it, or we'll end up with an explicit tag on iTunes. But it's an awful website. It's really badly designed, and from our point of view, they have removed seemingly all references to associate and affiliate cricket from that front page, unless you've got to scroll right down to the bottom and you get links to the five regions, one of which sort of doesn't actually work. Or didn't work until the other day, and it didn't work the other day when I checked it. Maybe it works now for all I know, but it would surprise me if it didn't. And you click on the events menu, and all you see is World Cup, World 2020, Champions Trophy, Women's World Cup, Under 19 World Cup. Nothing about the World Cricket League, nothing about the Intercontinental Cup. There's no regional events pages anymore. You've got to go down to those regional websites to try and find them. And there's a list of ICC members at the bottom that only has 10 countries in. Some people will say that the ICC really only does have 10 members, because that's how they behave. And this website, in terms of associate and affiliate cricket, is absolutely terrible. And I think it shows just how little regard perhaps there is in amongst the ICC for cricket at this level. They don't see it as something to market. And I think they're controlled a bit too much by marketing then. And this website is a result of that.
Yeah, which is really, it's disappointing as well, because from our perspective, we're starting to see a lot more interest in those games. And it's certainly, that's an area that is less tapped out as a market than the other areas. So you would hope that they could market the associate cricket and use that as their growth area, and they seem to be ignoring it and just tapping into the places that they've always gone to.
Yeah, and it's always been a puzzle of mine. Why wouldn't you want that bigger market? I think I saw someone say online recently that rather than seeing sort of a bigger pie of, if you like, they see smaller slices of the same pie. Whereas if you bring these teams in, you've got potentially a bigger market to expose cricket to, more sponsorship money, higher profile sponsors than they have now. And why wouldn't you want to market the game to more countries in the world? Currently, someone who's wants to find out about cricket in, let's say Germany, goes onto the ICC website, and it's going to be impossible for him to find out even if cricket is played in Germany. And that's not how it should be. If you look at websites of other governing bodies, look at FIFA, the International Rugby Board, the Rugby League International Federation, they have pages on every team. You can find information about almost any team that plays around the world, and you can't do that on the ICC website. It's for an international sporting governing body, this website is an embarrassment, to be quite frank.
Yeah, and one of my particular bugbears, if you go to the rugby site, you can find out the ranking of every team in the world, which we can't do on the ICC website.
Yeah, and even if you actually, there's a link that says rankings for ODI teams, and you click on that, and it has 13 teams in, but there's 16 ODI teams. So, because obviously the associates have to fulfil some ridiculous criteria to even get on the table. And it just shows, you know, where the ICC feel that their emphasis lies. It lies with those 10 full members. That's why they try and, that's why they qualify automatically for World Cups. That's why they try and protect their places in World Cups that, in the world, in those World Cups. And that's why there's only 10 test playing teams and hasn't been a new one in 13 years.
There is, however, still cricket in the Associate World coming up.
Yeah.
And in fact, it is a real, it is a, even an ICC listed one day international, which is the Pakistan's tour of Scotland and Ireland. Your thoughts on those games?
Yeah, hopefully the weather will behave, especially for the second game against Ireland, because I'm actually going to that game. I think Ireland perhaps have a better chance of pulling off a win than Scotland do. No disrespect to Scotland, but Ireland are a much stronger side, much more professional, and much more capable of competing with Pakistan. Last time Pakistan played in Ireland, Paul Sterling scored an absolutely fantastic century, which I think Waqar Yunus, I think, was the Pakistan coach at that time, and said it was one of the best centuries he'd ever seen. So hopefully, perhaps they can do that again and do enough to actually beat Pakistan. Scotland, as I say, I think have less of a chance of beating them, but hopefully they can at least compete with them.
And it's a discussion point. Where do you think, as supporters of Associate Cricket, we should be hoping for from these games? I know I've asked you this before, and we've, you know, obviously we hope that they do well and so forth, but on the other hand, we don't necessarily expect them to do well because we know that they're not at the same level as that. What should we hope to see, and what do we hope to see out of the media for coverage of these games?
That's a good question. In terms of media coverage, these games can sometimes be ignored by some cricket media. If you watch Sky Sports cricket coverage when there's an associate ODI on, they won't mention it, but they will mention any ODI that involves two full members. I think they're hoping that these matches will be live streamed. I think Quipu TV said on Twitter the other day that they're in negotiations to cover them. I think they have the rights to cover them. I think they're just trying to arrange sponsorship. So hopefully they'll be live streamed and be put out to a wider audience. As far as sort of fans of Scotland and Ireland go, I think part of the problem is that whilst these games perhaps attract a new audience, if Scotland and Ireland then get thrashed by Pakistan, that could actually put off that new audience and sort of maybe make them think twice about going to cricket again. So it's a sort of double-edged sword. They attract that new audience but have the potential to put off that new audience if you end up with a ridiculous mismatch, or sort of similar to how we saw in the Asian under-19 tournament. I'm sure it won't be seeing Scotland or Ireland losing by 300 and odd runs, though. To some extent, these games are not the important games for Scotland and Ireland. The important games are those World Cup qualifier games. Scotland and Ireland play each other. I think Scotland play Kenya, Ireland play the Netherlands. Those are the crucial ODIs. But you need these games against the full members, which to some extent don't really matter. They bring in the money, they bring in the sponsors, which you need to be able to perform well in those other less high profile but more important games.
Yeah, it's certainly a problem for trying to get people to attract it to Associate Cricket that this game will get more coverage than and be more likely to be an upset that will then just have people say, Associate Cricket's not very competitive. Whereas, as we've already discussed with the recent games between the Netherlands and Netherlands, you can have extremely competitive and extremely interesting and extremely well-played games between Associate Nations, which are more important because they actually lead to something like a World Cup qualification. It's good to see the Pakistan's touring, but we'll be just a little bit disappointed that this might end up being the only time people pay attention to the two nations over the summer, or one of the only times. Mm-hmm. All right. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you.